Welcome back to another Jackrabbit Illustrated podcast brought to you by our title sponsor, the Kubota Dealers of South Dakota. Whether it's tractors, mowers, utility vehicles, construction, or farm equipment, Kubota's got you covered. Now with 9 locations across the state of South Dakota, there's always a dealer nearby. Visit your local Kubota dealer today. Jackrabbit podcasts are also sponsored by Culver's of Brookings in Watertown, the home of the Butterburger, Jackrabbit Central, the best place to get your Jacks gear, and the best sports bar in South Dakota, Cubby Sports Bar and Grill. Without further ado, here is the A-Team.
Hey, here we are. Here we are. We're all back. Dallas is with us for an entire episode tonight. We're at our usual 8 o'clock time slot, and we are joined by the best of the best here, Mr. Sam Herter, joining us tonight to talk Marker Week and FCS landscape. Sam, how the heck you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you guys for having me.
Good, good. Dallas, Chad, how are you guys?
I'm a little tired. I had a rough night. We talked about that. Not that rough, but you know, I didn't get the full slate of sleep. So, you know,
I'm good. I'm good, Matt. We had a big sports weekend and I don't know, man, so oldest daughter Aspen ran in the conference championship up in St. Paul or no, excuse me. It was in Northfield, but she did an awesome job. So got to see that. My son dressed for the varsity playoff game. Youngest daughter made the top team for her age for hockey and then had another game and lots of running around, but had an awesome weekend overall.
Hey,
there was a college game yesterday too, I heard.
Yeah, right. Well, before we dive into one rivalry, first need to talk about our title sponsor just for a second, Kubota Dealers of South Dakota. Again, I've talked about my BX 2680. Absolutely love it.
Carl still, the Kubota. That's
Carl,
its name.
Yeah, we're going to name it Carl, I guess. Yes. Been getting it ready for winter, getting everything kind of done for that. And you know, when you watch like instructional videos on YouTube and they make everything look so simple, anyone know that? Like they make it look so simple.
I hate that because I'm the least handy person in the world. I just get mad and throw things. Same. I usually bash my knuckles on something.
Yes. Yes.
I usually watch them and I'm like, why would they do it that way when it looks like this way is easier?
Good for you, Chad. Building a shed. Whatever. Anyways.
No kidding. You built a shed and dug a stupid trench and whatever else you do in your free time.
Yeah. This morning, ate breakfast, turned on YouTube on the TV, and decided I was going to figure out how to take the mower deck off the easiest way. And they showed it, and it was... And I went out inside and did it, and it was super easy. And it's been that way for everything. Taking the mower deck off, putting the loader on and off. They say it's easy to use, and folks like me who are not mechanically inclined can do it. And we got it done. So if you need a Kubota, give one of the dealers in South Dakota a call. There's 9 of them to choose from. There's got to be one semi-close to you. Watertown was the nearest for me, and I absolutely love it. So thanks, Kubota, for your sponsorship. Really appreciate it. So let's talk about the game against South Dakota, right? Or the massacre in the dome. The massacre in the, what are we calling it? A silo, the wastewater treatment plant. Sam, let's go to you first. An objective observer here. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it was a statement win for South Dakota State, obviously. But I think you couple that, the performance that the Jacks had, you couple that with everything that else that happened in the landscape of the FCS with number 2 Montana State going down, and just every week there's chaos, but yet the one steadiness of this FCS season has been South Dakota State holding on to that number 1 spot. And I just thought, overall, for the most part, a dominant performance. Obviously the first quarter there was pretty overall pretty sloppy football on both sides, kind of, you know, feeling each other out, feeling the crowd out and in the stage out a little bit. But once South Dakota State put the hammer down, it was just, you know, it's looked like the number 1 team in the country.
Yeah.
So how many games do you actually sit and watch on an average week? I'm curious because that's gotta be how you get most of your insight. You must watch a lot of football.
Yeah. I've never actually like counted up the total, but it's probably Between 30-ish, 30 to 40 games. And the challenge is, because there's, I have like the Apple TV, so you can kind of have four different screens or four different games going on one screen, and then have a TV to the side. Then sometimes a sixth game going on my computer, especially when in like the 3 o'clock window, which is great because you kind of want to get a, you know, see what's going on in the Big Sky and the CAA, the SoCon and the Valley. But what's difficult is you can't zero in on one game and know in depth, this is the flow of the game, this is what happened, when your eyes are kind of bouncing all over the place. And there's been times when I'm watching a game and it's 21-7 and I'll kind of look away for, you know, 5 minutes because something else is going on. And all of a sudden it's 21-21. And I'm like, oh crap, I completely missed what happened in that game. So try to keep your eyes on as much as you can, but sometimes it can be difficult to really dive into one game. Unless it's Big Sky After Dark, then that helps me out for that part.
Yeah, that's impressive. I mean, I just, you know, watching the game on my TV, one game, and then usually a game on my phone or iPad, you know, at the same time. And that's enough. So I can't imagine you trying to keep everything straight and then have to actually, you know, write about it and report on it during the week. So thanks for all you do. We do appreciate that.
Thank you.
I'm curious, Dallas, did you get to watch much yesterday?
With all running around, I got to watch about half, and it was kind of in and out here and there.
Sure. What are your initial impressions or overall impressions?
I mean, it's all, I feel like, anybody that's listening here has probably read the same stuff I have, and I feel like it's all been said. That last three quarters was as dominant a football game as I've seen. You know, you got through, it was exactly what I think a lot of people pictured, where you have this big emotional onslaught, right? And I'm not even trying to talk smack right now, but if you've got number four coming in, everybody's told them it's the biggest game in the history of South Dakota, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh man, this is our chance. And they took their biggest swing and it bounced off. And then that was it. And that's essentially what happened emotionally in the game. And one of the things that impressed me, like, I don't know if I've ever felt this confident in a team. And I know that sounds silly because we know how good they are. And honestly, I think we get a little bit uncomfortable with people telling us how good they are all the time right now this year. But, you know, all of those things happen typically to me when I'm watching a football game in the flow of it. And you get in a semi-hostile environment. You've got those false start penalties. You've got a couple things not go your way in the beginning. And normally I get so tense. Like, it goes back to like playing days at any level, where if things went badly in the first quarter, like, I could just feel tension in my chest. And this game, I'm like, nah, whatever, it'll be fine. They're going to get through it and they're going to be, you know, whatever, they're just going to move on. And they did. And then watching some of those playmakers step up and, you know, Yonke with those two just giant plays at the, you know, at the start of the game offensively to finally kind of turn the tide. And then watching Mark do what he does and have the most Mark stat line I've ever seen, but just be perfect. Like, it was a fun game and really enjoyable to just step on the Yotes. As much as I like to pretend that they're not rivals and all that, it feels real good to beat them. That was fun.
Yeah. Hey, so I want to get into some of the specific things that, you know, we looked at and talked about last week. And yeah, weathering the storm, we talked about that. The second thing we talked a ton about was limiting explosives, right? And you guys saw this. USD came into the game. Majority of their touchdowns were from explosive plays, 20 plus yards, whether it was runs or through the air. Sam, how many explosive plays do you think they had yesterday, USD?
Man, I don't even know if I can remember one. Was it like one or two? Zero?
They had zero.
I was going to say, I don't remember one. Was it zero? But I'm like, oh, it can't be zero. Maybe it's one or two here or there. That's zero. That's my
zero. Impressive. 183 yards total, 50 rushing yards, just dominant. Bowman came into the game having one interception. They got him twice, a sack, which, you know, that he's been tough to sack this year too. So just an impressive performance. And, you know, I said this in Rants and Raves, in a game that had Dyshon Gales and Miles Harden, right? That's the corner. You know, two of the best cornerbacks in the Valley. Dallas Beanham was the best cornerback on that field yesterday.
Yes, he was.
Was so dang good. Oh,
it was. Can we go back quick? You guys flashed up. Chad, you flashed up. Somebody questioned that targeting penalty. And before we get too far there, just because this was early in the game, I wanted to touch on that. just as a football fan, I hated that so much. I get it. There's the letter of the law. There's the rule. But I at least want to say, even though that's the opposing team, the fact that that kid couldn't play anymore sucked, and I hate it. So sorry, Matt, yeah, stole your thunder. Go ahead.
No, you're good. And you saw it. We'll talk about this with NDSU too, right? Losing a safety on a very similar play, like just kind of making a tackle. It's not malicious. Like the getting tossed and suspended part really, really stinks in my opinion. Let it be a 15-yard penalty, but give the refs some latitude to make a determination on, you know, intent or whatever. Like it.
Any thoughts on how that could be like enforced? Sam, you have any thoughts on how maybe they could move forward and change that rule? Because as Alex, who's our resident official, has pointed out, high school doesn't have that. NFL doesn't have that. NCAA is the only place where that exists.
The getting tossed. Yep.
Yeah. You would hope that they would implement something where they can, I mean, they obviously review it all the time. And so, you know, if they could have, whether you want to go flagrant one, flagrant two, or whatever, however you want to utilize it. And I think they changed, I can't remember when they changed, but for a little bit, there was, if you got ejected, you also had to leave the field, which was just right. Yes. Over the top. Now I believe you can stay on the sideline. Mm-hmm. And obviously I saw, I think it was the USD SDSU game. And then there was another game too. It wasn't the NDSU game. It was another game too, where I saw they show the guy on the sideline after getting ejected, and the guy's crying because, I mean, mm-hmm. you only have a minimum of 11 games in a season, and then you eject him. And if you eject him in this, the one I don't like either is if you get ejected in the second half, you have to sit out the first half of the next game. That's just, if it's a absolute malicious one, you know, launching, yep. you know, absolutely malicious. Yeah. But if it's, you know, bang, bang play, and there's no bad intent to it, 15-yard penalty, and then, you know, just keep on playing.
Yeah. And like yesterday, go ahead, Chad.
No, I was going to just say, piggyback on what you said, as I thought I've said before that I think we should do a flagrant one, flagrant two. And if you get two flagrant ones, kind of like yellow card, red card, whatever, you're out, you know, for the game. But yeah, go ahead, yeah. Matt. Sorry.
And yes, you know, bang, bang like that. Yesterday, Amar hopped up, Barrows hopped up. There was no flag on the field. Like it just, you know, the players again hopped up, they started jawing at each other a little bit, and they both ran back in their directions. It was a football play. Like I don't know. It just, I get it. You know, when you watch it in replay, it sure looks like targeting, but it targeting as the law is written. Not saying I love it. But I hate the suspension or the miss the game, the getting kicked out for the game and the suspension piece, the next half of, you know, second half penalties. That's just ridiculous.
And then we had two bang, bang, helmet collisions.
Yeah.
That drew no scrutiny, which fine. I'm not complaining because like you guys, I'm over this rule, I think. And I think the ADs and the coaches would come together to change that in the NCAA.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I understand as a parent of a young football player, I get the intent. So now that I've fully derailed the podcast, we can jump back in, I guess, kind of talking through the flow of the game. So again, the very beginning was, I mean, even though the results weren't necessarily there, emotionally, it was all JSD. It was all the Yotes. And then the tide begins to turn. You get a long play to one Yonke. I guess maybe, Matt, do you want to just kind of talk through, I guess, how you kind of felt what was the turning point to you? I guess that's my question.
Yeah. So last night, Borg and Alex did an awesome job kind of talking about this and that 94-yard touchdown drive, or whatever it was, 90 plus. That was awesome. It just kind of showed like, okay, we can do whatever we want against this defense after kind of, you know, stubbing our toe in that first quarter. I don't know, just Amar being able to hit teams with Isaiah and Amar, two totally different styles of runners. And it always feels like if maybe one of them's not having the best day, the other one is. So those two are just special to watch. Absolutely love what Amar Johnson is doing this year. I mean, he's one, I hate to put this out there into the universe, but man, he's one I would hate to lose after this year, you know, because we're losing so much already in offense. hopefully he sticks around and he can see himself as the next guy. Pierre, yeah. Isaiah, then Amar, right?
I mean, he is the next guy. And I, you know, it, you look at, he has to see what you can do.
Uh-oh.
I think we're having technical difficulties with Dallas.
Showcased, right
now.
You know,
he's just whistling.
Yep. Sorry about that. Sorry about that guy.
We
anyway. I don't know. I was saying he's a good running back. So,
Sam. Right, Sam. So. This week there's been. So Sam, this week there was a lot of discussion. USD's trio of running backs attracted a lot of attention. You know, with the Charles Pierre coming on along with Travis Tice. It doesn't quite seem yet that Nate Thomas is back fully healthy from his injury last year. So anyways, where do you see like backfield rankings right now in the FCS? You know, Montana State obviously has a bunch of talented dudes. Who else is out there? What other schools do we need to be aware of?
Well, I mean, I do think South Dakota State is number one. Yeah, Montana State has a really good backfield. Sac State, I don't know if you guys have seen them, but they have a super, super talented backfield. Guys that once they hit the open field, you know, they can really go. I like Central Arkansas. They have a duo, Shenderick Powell, kind of a smaller scat back, and then Darius Hale is a freshman All-American, sophomore All-American, kind of a bigger back. So that's a good two-headed monster right there. And so there's some good stables, but I think – I mean, Isaiah Davis, in my opinion, is the best running back in the FCS. And so that just, you know, boosts the running back room up as in itself. But I think Amar Johnson is very special as well. And so that's a good two-headed monster there. And then, you know, Angel Johnson, what is he, a freshman or a sophomore?
He's a sophomore.
Yep. Okay. Because it seems like he could be, you know, the next guy too, along with Amar, if they both, like you said, stick around next year, then those two, you know, the two Johnsons could
so,
be a two-headed monster.
Angel, so Angel, Sam, so if all of them, Angel passes the bus.
So Sam, get this. Our fourth running back, Derek Johnson, is from Texas and just an absolute stud too. He tore it up in the spring game. And I know someone that the coaches are really excited about, very similar to Pierre is who he's been compared to. So we're going to hit him with Johnson, Johnson and Johnson. Potentially.
It's going to be the law firm.
Hopefully they, well, I get, I mean, I don't know if South Dakota State, yeah, they don't do the jerseys on the back or the numbers on the back of the jerseys. Yeah, I was going to say maybe the first initial, then last name, but then I was like, oh, yeah, South Dakota State doesn't do the name on the back of the jersey anyways.
Yeah. Hey, so also, Sam, I wanted to ask you this kind of. So we saw Mark. You know, Mark was named to, like, the midseason All-American team, which I think for a lot of us was kind of a surprise because we see, you know, Mark doesn't put up the statistics, right, that a lot of other quarterbacks do. What are your thoughts about Mark kind of on the national level, you know, thinking about award season down the road here and All-American honors? Like, where does he stack up in your opinion?
Yeah, I think overall he's well-respected by, you know, folks that really, you know, pay attention to the FCS. You know, of course, the Walter Payton Award can be tricky because there are sometimes guys that are, you know, put up such gaudy numbers that you almost have to give them a look. And most of the time, you know, those players are really good. Like if you throw for 4,000 yards in the SoCon, you know, or the Southland, yeah, those defenses aren't as good, but you're still pretty good if you're putting up, you know, those type of numbers. But I think a lot of people, I don't know if I should say a lot, but most people understand that, you know, South Dakota State is not going to put up those gaudy passing numbers. I remember I think it was a couple of years ago, I had Pierre Strong Jr. number one or number two on my Walter Payton Award. But, you know, stats wise, he wasn't stacking up with some of the other guys, but I try to go beyond just, you know, the flat numbers and say, okay, who do I think is just the most talented guy? Who I think is the most important guy, you know, on their team. And I think Mark has that it factor about him. You know, even going back to his true freshman season, you know, winning the starting job as a true freshman, I think that says a lot. And then just his play, you know, continues to get better and better. Even, you know, stats wise, I think numbers wise, he's doing just fine as well. Can get it done through the air, on the ground as well. And so I think most would consider him, you know, an upper tier quarterback in the FCS. Will he be a first team All-American? I don't know. Maybe not. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think if the Jacks win a national title and he's the most outstanding player, I think they call it in Frisco. I mean, that's probably, or not probably, it is better than being a first team All-American.
Yeah. And I think he'd take that too. Right.
And it's also interesting because when you have the backfield that he does, do you really have to showcase your arm or your legs that much? I mean, he does at times, obviously, but yeah, just hand off the rock. That's what the successful formula has been this year.
And when he is asked to throw it, you know, it's not like, you know, a play action, scramble out to the right, throw it out to the flats. You know, you know, throwing down the seam, throwing fade routes, you know, going through your progressions. And so it's not like a dumbed down offense where, you know, he's taking advantage of a great running game and he's just, you know, kind of dinking and dunking. You know, you can, when he's throwing it, you can see that there is arm talent there.
Yeah. His throw to Wilde against SIU was beautiful. That one was. So, yeah.
Yeah, he's got a really high IQ for a QB, I think. I mean, football IQ is what I'm saying. I'm sure the dude's smart too. He's an engineer. So, well, I'm just saying you don't make it an engineering school for that long if you're an idiot. So, I mean, but yeah, I think we just haven't really ever seen him have to push the ball downfield a lot. And if he was on a different team, like maybe one of those Southland conferences or whatever without the D, throwing against that, he might be putting up those gaudy numbers too, potentially.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And when he has been, I mean, I can only think of one fourth quarter comeback when he had to throw it, and that was Montana State, and that was two passes and a touchdown. You know, obviously one was the wide receiver screen or whatever, but the one before that was what was that, like a 50-yard pass on, you know, on the money. And so those are also the type of clutch plays I think that sticks out when we're just talking about, you know, best quarterbacks in the FCS.
Yep. And he, you know, I think it's interesting too. We always say, you know, if Mark throws an early interception like this week or just looks at times like a little bit rattled, in our text group, we're always like, all right, time for a quarterback power, settle him down. And then he'll, you know, get a 8-9 yard carry, get up, get hit or whatever. And he gets up and then he just starts throwing darts. He looks good again. So, you know, Scott talking here, Mark is a leader and confident in his abilities. He is also willing to throw blocks for his dudes in the backfield. That was pretty cool. He was the lead blocker on two of those rushing touchdowns this week. So it's fun to see him do that. What were they calling him? Big fella, right?
I don't know. Did you happen to catch that, those plays, Sam?
Yeah, I remember the one where I think there was like a cutback, and then it was the running back and the DB, and you know Mark was out there. I think it was to the left out there, lead blocking. So yeah,
he was blocking Harden on that one. So
yeah, he's just a selfless player, always trying to do whatever he can to help his team out and make mm-hmm. a play. Because a lot of quarterbacks just stand in the backfield after they hand off the ball, but he's normally not doing that. So
yeah, Dallas, welcome back. We've just been talking about Mark. We asked Sam about the midseason All-American stuff. So,
yeah. Nice. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, but you just kind of blipped again, man.
What the heck? Guys, I don't know. I'm going to get my life together.
You're fine, Dallas. You're fine, man. Just blame it on your internet company or all your kids are streaming Frozen at the same time. I don't know. Your kids are too old for that. I know. I'm sorry. They're all watching Harry Potter, probably.
All right, Chad, let's do. Oh, there's the drink handoff. Let's do game balls. And game balls are going to be presented by Culver's this week. Let's do Culver's this week. Sam, you're from the Midwest. You know Culver's. Do you have a favorite Culver's order?
Yeah, there's actually a Culver's right down the road from me in Maple Grove, Minnesota, you know, home of one Jake Winicky, I believe. I usually just go with the butter burger, then, you know, the cheese sauce, definitely with the fries, and then probably like a root beer or two. So it's a pretty basic order, but I think a basic order is fine when it comes to Culver's.
Have you tried the Curter Burger yet?
No, I have not. No.
Oh, man.
So you know of the Curter Burger?
I don't know if I do, actually.
There you go, Matt.
Is that just cheese curds on?
It's a giant cheese curd patty, like on your burger. So I actually, these guys have been talking about this for a year, and I finally had it last.
You burgled the curd?
I did. I forgot to say it last week. I was so frustrated with my internet that we got it when we got back from Mexico. We swung into Culver's on our way out of town, and I got a curder burger. And I'm driving. It's dark. So my wife takes the first bite of it, and she's like, "This is incredible." I didn't know if I was going to get it back. Like, but she gave it back. But it is so good, Sam. You got to try the curder burger. It's at select locations, they say. But it's really good. So give it a try. So thank you to Culver's of Brookings and Watertown for your support over the last couple of years. Really appreciate it. This weekend when you go to the game, either stop in early or go after the game to get it. So thanks, Culver's. All right.
Will we see Sam Herder in Brookings this year for a playoff game, potentially?
Yeah, you came last year, Sam. That was fun.
Last year. We enjoyed it.
Yeah, that was a heck of a trip because I went to Fargo that semifinal.
Oh, that's right.
Brookings for the Saturday semifinal, and roads were not great, but I made it. I won't make it there this weekend, but come playoff time, you know, assuming South Dakota State will host a semifinal, I'll aim to get there for that one.
Hey, there we go.
I know you're a fan of the FCS in general, but are you still somewhat a Bison at heart, or not so much anymore?
Not really, no.
That's what I thought. Sorry.
Well, no, I think when I started doing the FCS nationally in 2018, you know, I got Bison Homer stuff all the time, but now I rarely hear it. And so I think, you know, most people following me long enough, I just kind of realized that, I went to school there, but, you know, I'm shout out Kevin Marshall, but, you know, I'm not wearing, you know, the Citadel hat or an NSU hat. I don't own any Bison gear or anything like that. I kind of just, you know, try to view every team as objectively as possible. And it just so happens that NDSU has been, you know, usually good the top forever team in the FCS. And so it's hard not to be complimentary toward them when they have been, you know, the national champs. Right. So.
That wasn't a slight towards your coverage by no means. Don't take it that way. You did an excellent job. It's completely not homerish at all, but I just didn't know if you still had, you know, kind of an affection for them since you went there. So that was, that would be fair if you did. I don't think that'd be, but watch out. Cause Kevin does watch this show every once in a while.
All right. So Chad, for players of the game, you guessed Zach Hines and Isaiah Stallbird. Not a bad guess.
Stallbird was not bad. I'm a little upset about 87. He was open a lot.
Yeah.
And the eyes didn't even glance that way. It did not seem.
Hmm.
Take of that what you will. When you got so many good targets, right? But he's always open. I think if it's me as the O coordinator, I'm going to say, hey, let's try and get him a little more involved. That's all I'm saying. I'd like to see them get him a little more involved. And you had, let me see if I can recall this.
Yeah.
You had Savion, who we didn't see a lot of Savion.
Nope. Bach played a lot. Bach played a lot. Yep.
And then you had Isaiah Davis. Yeah, Isaiah Davis. I don't know that he earned that one.
No, not this week. Not
this week.
And then Dallas out of the chat, though, had Mark. Mm. And then I think he had Dallas beat him, too. I'm pretty sure is what he had in the chat. So offensively, I gave it to Amar. I thought those two touchdown runs were good, special. He looked really good, like I said. And then I gave my game ball to Dallas, and then special went to Hunter Dustman. That's who I went with. So, yeah.
Oh, can I just, sorry not to talk enough, but oh my goodness, when he kicked the ball in there, you could just hear the thing ring.
Oh, Hunter,
so loud, like, boop, it's just louder than heck. It was crazy. I've never heard a ball pop like that, even in there. So that was kind of strange. I don't know.
That's cool.
Yeah, no, it was really cool.
Good. Chad, do you want to talk about anyone else?
You know, I think we covered most of it. It's really fun to watch Angel Johnson because he just bounces around like a. I don't. I don't want to. I don't know what to say, a jumping bean. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to call it. He's just so active, so live. And Isaiah Davis, did you see him jumping on one leg for extra 5 yards?
And he drugged that guy another one.
With one leg, bud. That was nuts.
Yeah.
And then Amar had one too, where he just he was running and he knew he was going to get tackled. And at the end, he just Superman for an extra 3 yards. I was like, I don't know what they put in those guys' Wheaties, but man, they are unique. All
backs. Yeah. Sam, I do have just a brief rant, and if you'll bear with me just for a bit here. So, you know, some revisionist history is going on with the USD faithful over on the USD Coyote Fans Nation board that we just need to address.
Coyote.
There is a post on there now talking about how yesterday was a turning point or this week was a turning point for the program. And it wraps it up with the final paragraph. It's a long, crazy rant, but it goes, it's one thing to have a nearly decade head start to D1 and basically having every success handed to you. When you have to scratch and claw for your success, you tend to appreciate it more. And I don't know where this guy was 20 years ago when the discussions were being had to go Division I, but the only reason we got a head start is because USD and UND did not want to go. And then I can say USD, I don't know about UND, but USD made it very hard for SDSU and actually 100%. Lobbied against SDSU going D1 at Board of Regents meetings, at the legislature. Yep. All this stuff. So last night on Twitter, I posted just the simple lead, follow, or get out of the way. And that's a famous quote from General Williamson that she spoke at a Regents meeting, a famous SDSU alum, that just said, USD, knock it off. Like, if you don't want to go D1, let us go at least. We want to. We're ready. And so this whole, you guys had a head start. It's not fair. No. Like, that's stupid. And you guys made it harder for us to go D1 when the Regents put stipulations on us, you know, that we had to meet X amount of criteria, X amount of financial support above and beyond what the NCAA already had in place. So don't talk about this, that stuff's just been given to us. Come on.
And then Matt, do you remember what stipulations were put on them when they went D1?
None. They waited. None.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but ask yourself how many people on that Board of Regents were USD affiliated at that time. I mean, sorry, Sam. We've had interactions with the Board of Regents. So interesting. How did they got a Board of Regents structure up there in ND, because you all have a different legislative process too. Do you guys just have this a six person panel? How do they do it up there?
I actually have no idea.
I'm sorry, it's not a football question.
The university system in North Dakota. I grew up in Minnesota and spent 4 or 5 years in North Dakota, but I'm not too entirely sure. But I do think, UND, obviously held back from going D1, same as NDSU. And so I think that is also kind of the same as USD and South Dakota State. And, even those 4 whatever years separation between them going up, I think that is that's almost an eternity, just trying to catch up to your in-state rival that's been, investing at a D1 level for 4 years to try to catch up to that is certainly challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Sam, let's talk about NDSU. And NDSU here is brought to you by Jackrabbit Central. That's the place to go to pick up all your Jack's gear. The downtown location in Brookings, the on-campus, the bookstore location, jackrabbitcentral.com. We've already – my kids are filling out their Christmas list, and they went to jackrabbitcentral.com. And when my daughters were at the last game, they got these Jack plush pillows. Now my son wants one. So, man, Jackrabbit Central, you take a lot of my money, but happy to support because you have the best stuff. So go to jackrabbitcentral.com to pick yourself up some stuff too. So, yeah. So, Sam, what the heck's going on up in Fargo this year?
Yeah. Tell us.
I don't know.
You've seen the tweets and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
you know, it's actually one of the funniest. This is something, you know, on the field, but it was a couple of weeks ago when the NDSU football account tweeted out, you know, the score, you know, here's the halftime score. And somehow I stumbled upon like the first reply to it. And the first reply to it was pass the ball, which is odd because usually it's run the damn ball, run power. But I think, you know, that is, you know, part of it where I do think the passing game for the Bison is playing really well. I think Cam Miller is mm-hmm. playing at a high level. Pass protection wise for NDSU, I think is, you know, pretty strong as well, but they can't get the power game running, power running game going, you know, unless it's quarterback power. You know, it doesn't seem like the offensive line quite has that, you know, smash mouth where they're just mauling, you know, opponents. Running backs can't really get going. But I think the more thing that I guess stands out the most is probably defensively is where they're really struggling. It just, you know, NDSU has had guys like Derek Tuscan, Jabril Cox, you know, Nick DeLuca, you know, just next level, you know, guys. And, you know, I've heard a couple times that, well, those guys just don't come around all that often. You know, you can't just rely mm-hmm. on always having those guys. But NDSU having those guys has been the difference between them, you know, being the number one team or being the number two team, you know, in past years. And they just don't seem to have those dudes. You know, I think Eli Mostert is still, you know, a really good defensive tackle. You know, I like Cole Wisniewski, their safety, who's really good. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I don't know. I watched every NDSU game. There's not really a guy where you go, you know, okay, that guy's a really good player. I think Logan Kopp at linebacker is really good. But other than that, you know, defensive tackle depth isn't great. Defensive end, no one really fears you there. Mm-hmm. You know, linebackers are okay. You know, the secondary's, you know, okay. So I don't know. I think it's a combination of whether it's recruiting, whether it's just losing some key guys to the portal. I think it all just kind of added up to this season where the Bison are still solid, but they're just not, you know, they just don't have, you know, those stalwarts and those studs and that star power like they've had in the past.
Mm-hmm. Offensively, you know, I'm really interested in Tamarick and TK, because I thought they were going to step up and have huge years this year, given that usually there's five dudes in that backfield. And this year there's two. So I thought they'd split the load and be putting up huge numbers. So is it, what is it? Is it them, you know, not reading the holes right or timing, whatever? Is the offensive line maybe being a bit more of a finesse line, you know, in the pass blocking, like you mentioned? Like, what the heck's going on with that? That's what I'm curious about.
Yeah, it is. It has been interesting because I thought they would have, especially Williams, you know, I really like Tamarick. I thought he was set for a big year, but he just hasn't really gotten going. Again, I think it is part of the run blocking for NDSU. I haven't looked recently, but a couple of weeks ago, I think NDSU's run blocking grade on PFF was in the 60s, which usually you would just expect the Bison offensive line to be a top 10, you know, just, you know, plowing ahead. I think a part of it too is, you know, I've heard, I think Matt Entz referenced it when they are doing some read option stuff, defenses are kind of, I guess, forcing the hand for the quarterback to keep it. And that could be a little bit part of why, you know, NDSU, their two leading rushers for a lot of their games have been the quarterbacks and not the running backs. And so that could play a part of it. But yeah, I just don't know if they have, you know, that really explosive guy like a Kobe Johnson or, you know, Bruce Anderson, you know, John Crockett. I mean, those guys were special talents. Yep. Yep. And I think the running backs they have now are solid, but we're used to just seeing these game breaking guys. And as of right now, it doesn't seem like they have that in the backfield.
Sure.
Yeah, and I think the O-line play is at a different level a little bit. I mean, you touched on that, but a great O-line will make a really good quarterback look even better. And right now, I think Cam Miller's their leading rusher still, ahead of even Tamarick Williams. And Tamarick, I think, only has like four more yards than Cole Payton. So it's kind of a strange situation to me compared to years past.
Yeah, and they lost Cody Mauch to the NFL. They lost Nash Jensen to the NFL. That was their left guard and left tackle. And so they moved their center to left tackle. I believe their starting right tackle moved to guard. So they switched some things around. And yeah, maybe it's taking time to gel, or maybe I mean, I don't know. I just, Nash Jensen always comes to mind when I think of like who's that mauling interior offensive lineman that NDSU has had. And it's, oh, Nash Jensen, like 6'5", 330, just always pushing the pile. you know, kind of play the same way as Mason McCormick, you know, just kind of a bulldozer, you know, in the middle of that offensive line. And you're just not really seeing that push this year.
Yeah. They, you know, some unhappy Bison fans from what I gathered on Twitter and then online, you know, with Entz leaving some of the starters in maybe a little bit longer than they'd like. Just a couple plays late third, early fourth, you know, obviously the safety, we mentioned him, Sam Young, out for the first half of this week on the targeting. Eli Mostert goes down with injury on kind of a weird getting up from a sack. Ankle.
That was Will Mostert.
That was Will. Okay.
Yep.
Thanks. Oh, okay. So I knew it was one of the twins, but wasn't sure which. So Will, and then a cornerback too at some point. Yeah. So I don't know. Lots of, it's been interesting, right? Because online, that's the worst of the worst or the best of the best, whatever. But just so much, like, you know, people are ready to get Entz out of there. Like, you know, a lot of comments about, you know, Kleiman's recruits are finally gone, stuff like that. From the national perspective, Sam, what do you think? it just seems so obviously spoiled, because the run of success is just absolutely unheard of for NDSU. But what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's a challenge, because I even catch myself still giving NDSU the benefit of the doubt, just, you know, in terms of, you know, for example, talking about NDSU's playoff positioning, and you know, I kind of go, you know, I still think NDSU will go, you know, 8-3, lose one more to South Dakota State, beat Southern Illinois, beat Northern Iowa, and, you know, they'll make the playoffs. But then I catch myself and it's like, well, why am I so confident that they're going to beat Southern Illinois? Maybe because it's at home, and so I would favor NDSU there. But going to the Unidome, Northern Iowa, with how Northern Iowa's been playing recently, mm-hmm. all of a sudden that's like, I don't know, with how NDSU played against USD and UND, you know, can they go to Northern Iowa and get a win? I'm not, you know, as confident in that anymore. So, yeah, it is difficult because it seems like NDSU has kind of been here before in 2021 and last year when NDSU kind of ho-hummed their way, weren't mm-hmm. really dominating opponents. And then once they lost to South Dakota State, you know, they dropped to 6 or 7, and then they eventually kind of climbed their way back and either won a national title a couple of years ago or made it to the championship game last year. And so I think that benefit of the doubt also kind of creeps into the back of our minds. But I mean, right now, NDSU, like strict schedule wise, I think they're in the 50s. They've only played 2 ranked opponents in the Valley. Both of those were losses. You know, Central Arkansas is now ranked who they played in the non-conference. Yep. And so that's yep. a pretty good win. But overall, just this resume wise, nothing really jumps off the page. And even on the field, you know, it just doesn't, you know, especially the defense doesn't really look exactly, you know, what we're used to seeing. I still think offensively they're still playing pretty well. It's more of a passing game than a running game right now. And so, you know, I can't pick apart the offense too much, but yeah, it's just, it kind of seems like it's slowly, you know, slowly the dam has been breaking. Whether that's Matt Entz, you know, I don't know. Even if they brought Craig Bull back, you know, to replace Kleiman, we still could be seeing, you know, something like this from NDSU, just because keeping that level of play for that long is so difficult.
Unprecedented even.
Yeah. But it you kind of have to go back to recruiting though, because we aren't seeing those dudes that we're used to seeing for NDSU. So I think a part of it is, you know, is recruiting, but it's going to be hard to keep NDSU down for, you know, for too long. I think they'll go 7-4, maybe 8-3 this year, probably go, you know, 8-3 next year. But, you know, if I had to guess, well, if NDSU is still in the FCS by 2027, my guess is there's going to be one more national title somewhere in there, just because they have so much more advantage. And where the FCS is at now, you know, I don't think NDSU is going to be going 7-4 every year. But, you know, right now, I think they're going to need to, you know, get some better recruits in and develop those guys.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not saying that they will lose out, but it's feasible they could. That's not crazy talk like it would have been in years past. Mm-hmm. If that happens, do you think there are the calls for Entz and Roll go up high enough that gets changed?
I don't know. I don't know. It's tough at the FCS level because you rarely see a coach get bought out. I mean, it's Montana went 7-4 one year and missed the playoffs, and they fired Bob Stitt. And so it has happened before. At 6-5 and missing out on the playoffs, I think there would be a lot of unhappy fans. Who are the big time boosters? You know, who are those ones that can make that call? You know, because put the pressure on NDSU's AD Matt Larson to make what could be maybe considered a rash decision. You know, I don't know if enough people push for it. Then if you're the AD, then, you know, sometimes you, unfortunately in college football, sometimes even at the FCS level, if your booster is saying they want to change, then sometimes that can happen. But I don't think it would be warranted, you know, in this hypothetical. I mean, Craig Bull went 3-8 one year, then 2 years later won a national title and won a couple more after that. And so my guess is, Matt Entz, even if they go 7-4, make the playoffs, lose in the second round, I still think I don't see him being let go. He's still won a couple of national titles. You know, he still has an overall record. I get that you're starting to see, like I said, the leaks in the dam where things are kind of getting worse and worse. But I don't know. I still think he's a pretty good coach, and I can't envision him being let go this year. Even if NSU does go 6-5, to me that would just be a little too rash.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for entertaining that hypothetical.
Yeah. So let's talk.
It'd make me happy inside.
we've been a little bit negative here about NDSU, and you know, they still are, as Sam has said, a very talented team. Passing offense, Cam has looked really good this year as a quarterback. Mm-hmm. I know he gets a lot of flack based on one game last year, the Incarnate Word playoff game, right? Everyone brings that up when he started, you know, and lost confidence in his arm. But, I mean, he has a ton of talented playmakers still. Zach Mathis, Eli Green is really, you know, Eli Green had that touchdown catch in the national championship. He's looked good this year. Raja Nelson, Braylon Henderson, still, you know, smaller slot type receivers that can. Braylon Henderson still is incredibly fast. That hasn't changed. Joe Stoffel at tight end. Stoffel's one of the best tight ends in the league, in my opinion. I really do enjoy watching him play. And then, you know, they've had some other ones. Cam Diggins, I think, is one of the tight ends, along with Finn Diggins. Thank you. Along with one other tight end. I can't remember his name.
Albrozio's not a tight end, right?
Yeah, he's the H-back, fullback type. Yeah, yeah. But he's a good player. He's fun, too. So, I mean, they do have weapons, right? And then Cole Payton has really been running well this year when he's gotten the chance. Cam's ran well this year. So it's just – it's going to be interesting. They're going to come in for the first time in a long time as like a true, you know, big underdog, I'm guessing, in this game. That's going to be interesting. That's weird. And we've just talked about this. They're going to be backed in a corner. That's a dangerous, dangerous team. What's NDSU like when they're backed in a corner? We don't know. and right now they kind of are. So, this cannot be a game where we think we're going to walk all over them. You know, we have to show up to play. So they're too dangerous, too talented. So,
yeah, I remember in the preview before last year's regular season game between South Dakota State and North Dakota State. And, you know, I think a lot of people were picking the Jacks to win that game, but I remember writing, and I picked South Dakota State to win that game, but, you know, I remember writing, like, would it be a surprise if NDSU kind of did a, hey, remember who we are here, and, you know, they beat South Dakota State, and it was, you know, in that first half, it was kind of like, all right, NDSU is doing the whole, hey, everyone's downplaying us, but we remember who we are, and they did that in the first half before South Dakota State, obviously, you know, turned things around there and won in the second half. Same thing in the title game. You know, I remember I asked, like, 30 anonymous coaches around.
Yep. That was a good article, by the way. That was really good.
Thank you. Yeah. And every coach that I think like 20 of them picked South Dakota State, and all of them like kind of pointed to the matchup on the field, and all the coaches that picked NDSU basically said, well, it's the Bison. They'll figure it out. They love Frisco. So it was more about the Bison just being the Bison rather than matchup here, matchup there. And so that's all going to the point of this upcoming Saturday where everything you look on paper kind of points to, or does point to, South Dakota State winning this game. But yeah, if NDSU, I mean, puts everything, you know, into this game, then you never know what can happen. And I think the Bison know that they need it, not only in the short pitcher and playoff positioning, but also just, I mean, what is it, a four-game losing streak right now? to South Dakota State for the Bison.
At least.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a lot. And that's I mean, that's going to impact recruiting, and just kind of the attention of the FCS and in the region. And so, you know, I think the Bison know that they need it, but you know, I think I've written this so many times. I said it so many times that if South Dakota State is on, like, no one's going to beat them. You're going to have to make South Dakota State have a bad game and an off game. And it seemed like USC did that for like 10 minutes of the game this last weekend, and then things kind of flipped. And so it's hard to see South Dakota State having an off game against the rival NDSU. Yep. It's just, it would be difficult for me to envision that happening.
Yep. All right, Chad, let's do some predictions, and then let's talk national landscape with Sam. Can we do that?
All right. Yeah, sure.
So, offensive player, what are you thinking, Chad?
Boy, I'd love to see the guy called last week, but the way the things went, we're playing NDSU, and right now it seems the best way to beat them is just to run it right down their throat. That's my take, be it as it may, good or not. I think number 22.
All right. It's a smart
number
pick.
22. I think so. Now, that being said, remember who had his coming out party last year in Fargo. Potentially, his style of running would match up well against them again next year. So I'm going to go 1A, 22, and Amar's going to get my 1B, if I can do that. That's maybe a chicken.
No, I'll take Amar for you. I'll take Amar off your hands.
All right, there you go. You take Amar.
All right, Dallas, you can chime in the chat or text us or something. So, all right, how about defensive, Chad? Actually, I'll go first. This is mine to go first here.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Right,
I'm going to go with the Tucker Large. Tucker Large again.
Dude, he's a stud. I love his game. When we had that one deep ball, I was like, who's that guy down there? Oh, number one again. Yeah, that's who it was.
Yeah.
But with the situation the way it is at cornerback, I'm going to take number 7, Dallas Beanham, again.
All right.
I'm going to give him he's getting carryover respect from this last game. If nothing else.
Okay. All right. And score prediction. Sam, are you going to make a score prediction here tonight with us? Are you going to save it for your article later this week?
I mean, I will pick South Dakota State to win. I don't really know what my score is going to be. I don't think it's, I have a hard time seeing a blowout, but it, you know, 14 point South Dakota State win somewhere around there.
Sure. You think that's where the line's going to come in? Where do you think the line will end up?
Well, I thought, initially, when I saw the USD line, I think it started at -17.5 South Dakota State. I thought that was
high,
pretty high. But obviously, I mean, Vegas always knows. I don't know. I bet it'll come in at 14.5 against NDSU. That's
what I was guessing too. 14.5. Well, yeah. I like the Jacks by 20 in this game. So we'll just go 40-20. I want to see us get back in the 40s.
Okay. I'm with Sam. I think a little closer. I'm saying 31-17. That's my prediction. 31-17.
What did you predict this last game? Do you remember?
Last game I was 27-17.
Okay, yeah.
Dallas was the closest. Dallas had 38-10.
And so. I had 31-14. So
Yep. So all right. So Sam, nationally, we've gotten a lot of questions on this Big Sky mess now. How are you sorting the Big Sky? What was your poll again this week? How did you rank these teams, these four big ones?
So I did Montana, then Idaho, then Montana State, and then...
As 2-3-4.
As 2-3-4. Yep, South Dakota State number one. And then Sacramento State number seven for me. Yep. And then that's it. UC Davis had dropped out a couple of weeks ago for me. And then they just lost to Northern Arizona, so that does not help them. Weber State has fallen off. Eastern Washington, for a little bit in September, looked like they were climbing up. They've fallen off, and so it looks like those four teams will be making the playoffs out of the Big Sky. And they, you know, Idaho has a really good path. They should win out. Montana still has to play Montana State and Sac State, both at home. So there's still a lot to be decided on where the Big Sky kind of shakes out from here.
Yeah. So I'm noticing in your top 25, you have Southern Illinois ranked over South Dakota. Do you think they get the W head to head?
Yeah. You know, I think that is where my prediction, you know, is going to be. Even last week at this time, I was kind of looking ahead, you know, a little bit, and I saw that USD going to Southern Illinois game, and I kind of went, ooh, you know, that could be like a UND goes to Northern Iowa the week after hosting NDSU. It could be, you know, these are 18 to 23 year olds. You know, sometimes your juices just don't get flowing when you're going from, you know, a rivalry game to Southern Illinois, which USD Southern Illinois, like, there's not really, like, it's just another value opponent. You know, there's nothing really to get too hyped up about as far from like a rivalry perspective. And so, yeah, I think that could be a trouble spot for USD.
Yeah, it's just another interesting week in the Valley, right? The SIU really opened my eyes when we saw them 2 weeks ago. That, you know, I'd messaged the group when I was working on my preview for them, and just looking at their depth chart, right? They start a defensive end that's, you know, 6'3", 235 pounds or something like that in their 3-3-5 defense. I thought we'd run all over them. And then they come into the game allowing just 60 some yards on the ground a game, and we put up 150. But that defense, man, I thought they'd just be a mess this year, losing Petrino to NDSU and then their defensive coordinator to Northwestern right before the season. But they really blew me away. That's a good defense. So SIU is going to be interesting for USD to handle.
Yeah, they've been stout for most of this year defensively. That Youngstown game is still just puzzling. 31-3 loss. I think weather was bad, but it was still just like a, I don't know what happened, you know, in that game. But for the most part, other than that, Southern Illinois has been really impressive. You know, defensively been really stout. They've gotten a boost from a couple of Eastern Illinois transfers, you know, actually some in-state in FCS transfers that have boosted that defense up.
Yeah. Yeah. What about, you know, SoCon this year? SoCon looks decent. A number of contenders here, and, you know, 3-4 teams potentially coming from the SoCon. What do you see from them?
Yeah, I think the SoCon has, you know, gained some respect, and we saw that last week with the committee too, having two teams in the top 10 with Furman and Western Carolina. Western has since lost to Mercer, which I think actually could help, you know, the SoCon as far as the number of teams to make the playoffs, because now Mercer, you know, with that win over Western Carolina, they look like they could hit 8 wins unless they get upset. You know, I still think Western Carolina can hit 8 wins. You know, Furman, if they win out, which there's potential they could, you know, they could be a top 4 seed. You know, Chattanooga already has 7 wins, and they have a win over Mercer. And so if Mercer's in, then maybe Chattanooga should be in. Yep. But Chattanooga's last two games are at Furman, or no, they host Furman this week, then they have a bye, then they go to Alabama. So if Chattanooga beats Furman, they're very likely in. If they lose, then they're 7-4, and then, you know, possibly, you know, get left out. But I think last year, going back to the respect thing, I think the SoCon gained a decent amount of respect last year. They got a team into the quarterfinals in Samford. You know, Furman very nearly beat UIW, and we know how good that UIW team last year was. Mm-hmm. This is basically the same look Furman team, and they look 1 year better than last year. You know, I think they play a lot of guys on the defensive line, so they rotate there, which is important. They play a physical brand of football. You know, it's not Chattanooga or Samford throwing the ball, you know, 50 times a game. They like to grind you out. And so I think Furman is – they've built themselves up to win, you know, in December. I don't think they're necessarily a national title contender, but I do think they are well built to, you know, make it to the quarterfinals. And then if they play Incarnate Word or someone again in the quarterfinals, then, you know, with that matchup, they could potentially make it to the semifinals.
Yeah. It's matchup specific with them. Yeah. So our friend Jason here brings up a question. Holy Cross, biggest disappointment. And I know the Crusaders lost a lot on that defense to the portal, to graduation, but also getting back Dobbs. I mean, I thought they had really built something there. What's up with Holy Cross on the defensive side of the ball, man?
Yeah, they're just really young, especially on the defensive fronts. And I knew they lost some guys on the defensive line, but like you mentioned, I thought Jacob Dobbs would be able to clean some of that up. And Holy Cross has actually recruited really well, you know, recently. And at FCS recruiting rank, because I know you can, you know, kind of laugh at that, because, you know, it is such a developmental subdivision, but they have recruited some high level athletes. And I think we saw that last year in the playoffs, but they lost a lot of guys defensively. I think they got some guys banged up too. Their really good cornerback is banged up. So their defense just doesn't have it this year. Offensively, it's still really good. I mean, Matthew Sluka is still doing his thing. He does have an upper body injury, and so he didn't play this last week. That is actually partially why he ran for 330 yards against Lafayette a couple of weeks ago, because he couldn't really throw the ball all that well. I don't know what his status is moving forward, but I mean, they have Army coming up in a couple of weeks. If they win there, I think that would mean 8-3 with an FBS win, maybe, you know, gets them in. But if they lose that game, you know, seven Division I wins, you know, 7-4 overall, I don't think Holy Cross will get in. If I think they have to beat Army to have a chance to get into the playoffs.
Yeah. I don't know. That's going to be a fascinating thing to watch too. Cause yeah, Lafayette, right, took care of them. They took care of Fordham this week. So Lafayette's path is kind of clear at this point too, as long as they don't stub their toe too bad.
Yeah, which is crazy because I don't think anyone had them on the radar to begin the season, did they?
No, not really.
It was basically Holy Cross versus the field when it came to the Patriot League. Maybe Fordham, but I mean Lafayette's one of seven undefeated FCS teams right now when it comes to FCS opponents. So I mean, you know, they're not bad. I mean, they got some talent. I really like their running back Jamar Curtis. So you know, they're a pretty good squad. I don't think they're like a last year Holy Cross team, but you know, I think depending on like if they get matched up with the fourth place CAA team in the first round, I mean that could be a pretty competitive game.
Yeah. Sam, this is a pretty obscure question right now, but maybe you've heard something. Anything on those two teams leaving the NEC? Sacred Heart was one of them, and I forget the other one, but Sacred Heart's been a team that's been in the playoffs before, I believe. Anything on that from those NEC teams, what they're going to do? Like,
so it kind of – I don't want to say they don't have a plan for football. But it kind of, I think they're talking to people, but they made the move, knowing, the MAAC, I think it is. They made that move knowing football wouldn't have a home and they'll have to figure that out. And so I saw or heard or read somewhere, but, that staying in the NEC as an affiliate members could happen. You know, I heard the Big South, I heard the CAA, which the CAA already is going to have 16 members starting next year. So I don't know that CAA needs to go down in membership, you know, in my opinion, not up, but
split in two.
Yeah. Go to divisions. But yeah, I'm not sure exactly where those two teams, Sacred Heart and Merrimack, where they're going to end up just yet.
Okay. Sorry. I know that question's a little bit obscure, but as long as I have you here, I figured I'd ask. So
Matt got one, and here's one from our reader, John Green, or listener, I guess. Sam, if you had to make a guess at this point in the season, who ends up with the number two seed on Selection Sunday? I've got a couple more for you.
Yeah, if I had a guess, I would actually go with the Vandals of Idaho. I think if Montana wins out, it's going to be the Grizz at number two, but Montana would have to beat Sac State and Montana State to get that done. I think Idaho has a pretty clear path to win out. So Idaho would be 9-2. Only one FCS loss, that is to Montana, but they would have three ranked wins, an FBS win. Two of their ranked wins for Idaho would be Sac State and Montana State, you know, two top 10 wins there. I think strict the schedule right now for Idaho is, off the top of my head, I think it's fifth right now.
It's pretty high,
It'll go back a little bit because they play three unranked opponents, but if they win out, you know, I think they'll be a top four seed for sure, and then you know, depending on what happens with Firm and Chattanooga, depending on what happens with Montana, I think they can slide all the way up to that two spot.
Hey, let's pick up Kurt's question here.
Sorry.
Let's go. Maybe you already covered. Do you believe in Delaware? This is a CAA question. We haven't talked about the CAA yet.
I mean, you had them at six, right?
I think. Let me double check. Seven.
Yeah,
or
you
six.
Had them at six.
I'm looking at six. Yeah, I mean they are undefeated versus the FCS, but they are lacking ranked wins. Their only ranked win is against New Hampshire, who since you know bowed out of the top 25. And they have a pretty favorable schedule. They finish the regular season like they usually do against Villanova, who's ranked, and so that'll be a tough one. But I don't know. They're playing much better defensively than what I thought. They lost a lot of guys from last year, but you know, under Ryan Carty, you know, they're usually always probably going to have an offense, you know, that could throw the ball. And they have a good running back. They have some really good wide receivers. Ryan O'Connor, their starting quarterback, has played really well, but he's missed the last couple of games. I believe it's an upper body injury, but their backup, Zach Maker or Marker, he's come in and he's thrown for a couple 300 yard games, but I think Zach got banged up last game and I don't know if he came back. It's kind of hard to get injury information from for some of these teams, so I don't know exactly where things are at, but I think Delaware is good, you know, maybe a quarterfinal team depending on matchups, but would I put them up there in the upper tier of like the 2-3 teams that can win a national title, then, you know, I would say no to that.
So what's the CAA going to get, you think? 3-4 teams with Delaware, maybe William and Mary, maybe Nova?
Yeah, I think Delaware has a good path, obviously. I think UAlbany should probably hit 8 wins. They're 6-1 versus the FCS. I mean, they're playing pretty well. I like their quarterback, and they have 2 really good defensive linemen for UAlbany. I think Villanova too, you know, has a decent shot to make the playoffs. But then after that, I mean, William and Mary has fallen off. Richmond is actually kind of – Richmond went like 1-2 in their non-conference and lost like Morgan State, and really wasn't looking good in the non-conference. They're now, I want to say, 6-1, you know, in the CAA. But none of those wins are against ranked opponents because there's 15 teams in there and, you know, unbalanced scheduling. So Richmond is kind of the team that's hard to gauge. But, you know, I don't know. I know for a lot of voters, the CAA's reputation has taken a hit just based off of how they performed in last year's playoffs. Mm-hmm. Really, the only team that played well in the playoffs, in my opinion, was Richmond, and they lost a lot of guys from last year's team. I don't know what the reputation is of the CAA from the playoff committee, which is, you know, the most important part of how the playoff committee views you. So I don't know. I guess long-winded answer. I would guess 3 teams from the CAA, possibly 4 teams from the CAA.
Okay. Let's do this question, Chad.
Yeah, no, I know this is peeling it back just a little bit to our previous question, but coming from a Jacks fan, Lonnie Har here is a little bit different perspective. What would you say are the big keys for the Bison to beat the Jacks this weekend?
I think defensively, I mean, obviously they're going to have to stop the run. You know, and I don't know what. So I heard before the national title game that NDSC was thinking about employing a 5-man front, and they ended up not doing that, but they were thinking about employing a 5-man front before the national championship game, just to stop, you know, the run. You know, maybe the NDSU does something funky like that, you know, with their linebackers or their defensive front to really stop the run, and then just hope that, you know, their defensive backs can win one-on-one battles, which is kind of a bold strategy with those receiving weapons, but you also can't just get bullied up front like they did in the national title game. And so maybe doing something that South Dakota State hasn't seen on film defensively. And then offensively, I think it's just staying in a rhythm, because for how much NDSU's run blocking and running backs haven't gotten going, NDSU can still kind of start rolling offensively where, you know, Miller's on a rhythm, you know, they're still really good in the play action pass. All of a sudden you got the defense guessing, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you got the linebackers dropping back, and then, you know, there's a crease there and TK Marshall could take it for 30 yards. That they still have that ability. So I think offensively it's just staying in a rhythm, and Cam Miller being sharp, and then, you know, the offensive line is gonna, you know, need to have their best game when it comes to run blocking as well.
Yeah, and I know it was against Missouri State, but that's one of the full Bison games that I've watched this year. And, you know, putting out these 3 tight ends or H-back, whatever, and doing that hard play action and getting Stoffel in space, like this offense can keep you off balance as a defense, you know, at times, because you still have to respect the run on them. And so I think you're absolutely right, Sam. Just if they get rolling, we saw that in the opening few possessions last year up in the Fargo Dome. Like, they're really tough to get off rhythm. And it's going to take something like a huge turnover, a quarter break, a halftime break, whatever it may be, to kind of stop that momentum that they get when rolls into rhythm as a play caller. I do think he's just fine. So he takes a lot of heat, but I think he's just fine when they're in rhythm. Chad, any last thoughts from you?
No, we just had some more questions, but it's getting late. I don't know if you got to go or if you want to answer a few more.
Sam, it's up to you, man.
I can go with a few more. Yeah, that's fine.
Sounds good.
So Drew Pappas has this question. I believe he is a Cats fan from the sounds, or I
looks
know.
Looks like it from the chat. He's a
Cats
fan.
I think
fan.
So.
I think he's been tweeting at me a lot during this podcast for some questions. I haven't really been checking it a whole lot. So
his question is: Do you all value the actual nature of the play of the game that occurred, or just the outcome? And I think I'll let you answer that. I guess. I think he's saying for rankings, honestly, is what I think.
Yeah.
He's
doing. Oh, yeah. I look beyond just wins and losses, yeah. You know, so I don't just, this team won, they move up or they stay the same. I mean, UIW keeps on winning, but they've moved back just based on, you know, what I've seen watching them and you know, how those games have played out. I mean, UND has slid back a couple of spots, even though they've won. They won this last weekend, and I still move them back. And I don't do it often, but there are examples of a team can lose and still move up. And sometimes that's based on, you know, other teams sliding all the way back. And I mean, if you're a team and you play South Dakota State really close, that's just going to gain you more respect. And so, yeah, you do go beyond just, you know, here's the score, you know, obviously watching the game and trying to have a sense of the game flow and, you know, just kind of valuing, you know, how teams won, who they beat, but also how they lost. So yeah, going beyond just the result, I think is important.
Okay. I'm not laughing at you, Sam. I'm sorry. I'm laughing at the comments over here.
I did text you a bunch, Sam. I can see that one.
Yeah. Ron, you're our guy. You're our Montana State guy, Ron. We know.
I had a good question up. Now it's gone.
Oh, yeah. It was Jordan Fink's question. Can the Jacks, Jordan Fink, longtime listener, first time caller, says, if the Jacks lose, will they still be a top two seed?
I think that could
we'll
be
lose pretty, one game. He said, lose
yeah,
one,
yeah, just one game. I think that still could be pretty realistic because we've seen, I mean, just to draw comparisons, I mean, we've seen South Dakota State beat NDSU in past seasons, but yet NDSU has still gotten, you know, a number one seed, even, you know, being able to afford that loss. And I think with South Dakota State's resume, you know, one loss, 10-1, there is a non-division one game in there, which still counts, but it doesn't count, you know, as much. But I still think it'd be 5 ranked wins, which would still be more than anyone else. And if, you know, Montana State wins out, you know, that's going to be good for South Dakota State because then Montana State will have, you know, an argument for a 2 or 3 seed, but, you know, South Dakota State has the head-to-head. Now, you know, could Idaho maybe go all the way to number one, you know, if they win out, you know, possibly, you know, is there a chance where Idaho wins out, Montana wins out, South Dakota State loses one, and that puts South Dakota State at 3? That could happen, but I still think overall South Dakota State, defending champs, you know, one loss, 5 ranked wins will, honestly, I still think South Dakota State could be a top two seed, even if the Jacks do lose.
That'd be wild. I still think back to 9 years ago when the Jacks played Western Illinois for a chance to get into the playoffs as a seed for the first time, I think. And they ended up dropping that game and then got shipped to Montana on a Thanksgiving weekend game. So don't even want to put ourselves in the committee's hands. Just win out. Just win these 3 games and not even worry about it.
Yeah, so one last one here from Terry Youngin. Do you have a sleeper team to win out and make the playoffs?
I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I don't know. Keep an eye on Tennessee State. Eddie George.
Nice.
Yeah. They kind of got things rolling. Terrell Allen is a really good defensive lineman for them. I think they could potentially win out, and I don't have their schedule in front of me. I think they could hit 9 wins.
Florida A&M? Still?
They do not. So they're in the Big South. They are an HBCU, okay. But they are a part of the
Wrong
Big
one.
South.
Right, right.
Yep, they're a part of the Big South OBC Association, which is, you know, UT Martin's in there, SEMO's in there, Gardner Webb's in there. So it's a decent conference. It's not, you know, top 3 or 4 or anything like that. But I think if Tennessee State wins out, I think they have a non-D1 on there. They might only have like 1 ranked win, but if they win out and go, I think they could go 9-2. You know, that obviously 9 wins is going to stand out on the bubble when there's a bunch of other 7 win teams on there.
Yeah. Yep. Awesome. Sam, thank you so much for your time. appreciate it tonight. And yeah, hopefully we'll see you in Brookings. Hopefully, you know, we get to, we do make the semifinals, hopefully make it down in Frisco again and get to hang out again. So, appreciate all you do. Your content is just awesome. So thanks for covering this level.
Thank you guys. I appreciate those kind words, and thank you for having me on.
Yeah. I think it's that time too, isn't it?
Yeah. And Sam was presented by Cubbies, by the way. Sports Bar and Grill here in Brookings, the best place to go before or after the game. If you're not tailgating, if the weather's bad, whatever it may be, or if you just want to watch some of the other stuff that's on the TVs. So
been there a couple of times, so great place. There's my addition to
What's your favorite meal at Cubbies? What's your go-to?
I don't know if I've ever eaten there. I've had drinks there, but that's I don't know if I've ever eaten there actually. So
right on.
Perfect. Yeah, thanks, Sam. And with that, go big, go blue, go Jacks.
Go Jacks. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. We would also like to once again thank our sponsors, the Kubota Dealers of South Dakota, Culver's of Brookings and Watertown, Jackrabbit Central, and Colby Sports Bar and Grill. And as always, go Jacks.